This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back, my friends, to today's News Talk TNT. And now I shall tell you what I was saying earlier, and I want your advice. I want you to stop talking about microphones in the chat and start talking about this and tell me whether I should or not. Because yesterday I was approached by a mainstream journalist who writes for some of the most awful tabloid newspapers in the UK, The Sun and The Mirror. He wanted me to talk to him about the BBC sex offender who has yet to be prosecuted, DJ Tim Westwood, who has his comeuppance seriously on the way. And as I said in the opening monologue, I do want to talk with those who have conflicting narratives. But should I speak to those awful outlets? A perfect example to study. I'm probably going to run a poll on Twitter and I will abide by the answer. And I get a feeling it will be a big, strong no. But you tell me too. Should I speak to this person about this case? And now I've already had the BBC try to co-opt me twice for the Westwood story. Both times would have been me involved in their cover-ups of the case. At one point, the BBC arranged a debate about Tim Westwood affair after their second cover-up they wanted me involved in, but they used something called Chatham House rules during the event, which means the press were allowed to report on what was said, but they weren't allowed to report who said it. Very interesting rules. The MSM love to co-opt cases such as this, and I'm going to read you the closing of an article I wrote about my free experiences with Tim Westwood while I was working in a five-star hotel. So tell me in the chat whether you think I should help The Sun or The Mirror, both evil papers, expose Tim Westwood. And remember, it's an opportunity to get the truth out to an audience with blinkers. That is, if you can trust such a journalist to actually tell the truth. And in August 2019, sickened by the action of Conor McGregor, I wrote a thread on Twitter explaining about some of the people who were celebrity sex offenders still at large. I wrote a tweet about Tim Westwood within that thread, and since then I've been contacted by none other than the BBC, who were then, when I wrote this article, trying to micromanage the affair in an effort to limit the damage done, because of course he was BBC DJ, to their tarnished credibility. Another BBC Radio 1 DJ had abused masses of young girls whilst he was representing, supposedly abused, but I've seen things firsthand, so I tend to say something different, and I'm happy for them to come after me, because they're not going to, whilst he was representing the British Broadcasting Company. And this should be a signal to end any public funding for this completely backward and outdated organisation. There should also be a comprehensive investigation into BBC entities of the past and present in relation to the exploitation of children and vulnerable young girls in particular. It's very clear that the British Broadcasting Corporation has significant and continuous issues with employing men who target children and young people. There is no doubt in my mind that nothing has changed and that this activity will still be happening in the BBC to this very day. It's a sick institution which doesn't learn from its experiences. Instead, if the BBC aren't able to hide, obfuscate, or cover up their criminality, then they will micromanage the revealing of any information surrounding any event to limit the damage to their treasured organization. And this should not be the start of just another BBC historic sexual abuse scandal. This must be the end of the BBC as a public entity. They knew perfectly well at the time that Tim Westwood was acting inappropriately, and you should expect this to become more well-known as the case comes out to the public, hence these mainstream journalists contacting me. For Tim Westwood to offend, it took the BBC turning a blind eye to his assaulting young girls, some rumoured to be children. This has happened again and again, and we can be sure that if this has been the reoccurring theme throughout the history of the BBC, then it is still happening to this very day. Open your eyes, withdraw your license from this abominable organization, which has been responsible for the systematic sexual abuse of thousands and thousands of young girls and boys throughout its horrible history. We know that Savile abused lots and lots and lots. So I'd like to see what's happening in the chat. I raced through that so I could get in the chat 100%. They'll twist things, Johnny. Yeah, I completely agree that they will. They are the lowest of the low, says Wee Fat Shook, and somehow twist your words. I'm pretty positive that this will be some way to try and smear me in the same way they smear other people. They will just twist everything you say, says Mary. Frangle Berry Pitching Pie Low. Johnny was a psyop before psyops were a thing. Laugh a lot, says Gold Eagle. Oh, I love very much. I see that everybody in the chat is saying the same thing. They're saying, BBC brainwashing corporation, says Photon. There's lots of no, never talk to the BBC. Well, it's not the BBC, it's the Sun and the Mirror, which may be even worse than the BBC. But the BBC already tried to get me to talk to them twice, and I already went through having a discussion with them and said no at the end, so I could hear everything that they wanted to tell me and get as much information off them as possible and then write it all down. If you do video every second of it, yes, that's Mogden. The scum, exactly, Johnny. They'll never learn. They are liars. 100%. People say, I think it's going to come up. I think, Gold Eagle says, I think Tim Westwood should star in the remake of the box office hit Predator. That would be true and be exactly right. And Photon says, DJ Gatekeeper, who was kind of like Jimmy Savile, in response to Dark Commission saying, who is Tim Westwood? Yes. And Wee Fat Shook says, you're bigger and way better than them all put together. I thank you very much for that, and I'm glad that you feel that way, and I think that's the result that's going to come out of it, and I think that's what I'm going to end up doing. But I got to remember as well, talking to the other side is meant to be something that we do to be able to change things. But if the other side is never going to report on your words, then what is the point of talking to them? And then it's not doing the same thing. Now, to end on that, did you know there are many ways to listen to TNT? Why not stream us direct from our website to your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. We've got you covered on TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Awesome. Well, in this news that's coming up now, it makes a lot of sense in context to what we've talked about for the past hour. According to multiple sources, famed magician David Copperfield is facing accusations of sexual misconduct and inappropriate behavior for more than a dozen women. Here with the story, joining me once again, is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Please tell us more about this man who used to attend Jeffrey Epstein's party.
Absolutely. For my next trick, I will now report this news. No, just kidding. Yes, David Copperfield. Man, this is a sad one for me because he's one of my idols. I'm a big fan of up close magic. I actually perform up close magic using a standard deck of 52 playing cards. True story. So I've been a longtime fan of his since I was a kid. David Copperfield, in my mind, will always be the man who's most famously known for making the Statue of Liberty disappear. He did that. It was wild. That was like 41 years ago. I watched it on TV. So sad to hear the news. I'm sure today he's wishing he can make himself disappear from these allegations. It's 16 women, to be exact, Johnny, that he is being accused of conducting sexual misconduct and inappropriate behavior toward. These accusations span decades. We're all learning about this thanks to an investigation by The Guardian, at least their U.S. newspaper version. These claims span from the late 1980s to 2014. The report claims that the American illusionist, quote, drugged three women before he had sexual relations with them, for which they felt they were unable to consent, end quote. The bombshell report also claims that over half of the alleged offenses happened when victims were under the age of 18, with some stating they were as young as 15. However, it is possible that Copperfield may not be aware of their ages. Okay. Copperfield's lawyers have rejected the allegations, calling them, quote, false and entirely without foundation, end quote. His lawyers told the newspaper that he has, quote, never acted inappropriately with anyone, let alone anyone underage, end quote. And a, quote, unquote, truthful depiction of the magician would describe his, quote, kindness, shyness, and treatment of men and women with respect, end quote. One victim with the alias Jillian told the outlet that she agreed to meet Copperfield for a drink in 1993 after one of his shows. She is quoted as saying, quote, I would never just say this to somebody if I didn't truly, honest to God, believe that I was drugged at that time, end quote. Another victim claimed that she met the magician at one of his concerts. She was said to be 15 at the time. The victim alleged that after she performed on stage with him at a gig in Savannah, Georgia, he approached her and her mother in the parking lot. As per the report, he took her phone number and handed her a business card. He apparently promised her to take her to dinner when she turned 18. But he started to call her late at night. She said he sent her gifts and tickets to his shows. They had consensual sex after she turned 18. She said that was her first time. She told the paper, quote, I was a young schoolgirl infatuated with a man who was famous, and I think he used that to benefit him. Why would he continue to reach out to me through those years if he wasn't planning on pouncing as soon as I turned 18, end quote. Her words, not mine. Women in four other cases claimed that Copperfield had groped them or made them touch him in a sexual way during live performances on stage. One victim even claimed that the magician squeezed her breast after he called her on stage during a performance in January 2014 at the MGM Grand Casino Hotel. The report mentioned that she even approached MGM and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. The police told the newspaper that they had to close the case because of her, because of insufficient evidence. According to the report, she felt her claim was never taken seriously. And in case you missed it, Copperfield had recently come under fire for his association with none other than Jeffrey Epstein. That's right. I'll just read you a headline here so you get the idea. This is back in January this year, 2024. New York Post headline, David Copperfield performed magic tricks at dinner with Epstein accuser at late pedophilia's home, according to court docs. So we're learning a lot of things we didn't want to know about Mr. Copperfield lately, Johnny, but what say you?
Yeah, indeed. And at those parties included David Blaine as well. They liked having the magicians around. And also they liked hanging around with people who would slip something in someone's drink. It's really not a surprise to hear this. I know Gold Eagle in the chat says everyone knew about David Copperfield, which of course is his reputation has preceded him and given him a nickname. It's not too surprising because the whole industry seemed to be riddled with people who were looking to take advantage. But what is terrifying is that he was so focused in on that certain age group. He was, I find it hard to have a conversation with an 18-year-old. If you have a conversation with an 18-year-old at this age now I'm at, or even in my 30s, even in my late 20s, it's like a lot like talking with kids. I mean, my sister said it when she was about 25. I hate going out with to these certain clubs because it's all full of 18-year-olds and I don't understand anything they say anymore. And I don't understand anything they say. So there's obviously a big gap, but there is a point where people are supposedly adults, and I've started to wonder whether 18 is that age, or if there's a better way to understand what that age is when someone becomes responsible for their own actions in that sense, because I find it it's clear that our brains form, even from science, that our brains do not properly form until the age is about 21 to 24. So we're still able to be taken advantage by such people. It's quite amazing. I know that loads of people in the chat are talking about this. And when we were talking, who's that day? Is that Dark Commission saying, oh no, who's next? Oliver Twist. There is too much, but magicians tend to be people who want to trick people. So, you know, that tends to be part of the process, is confusing people and making people believe something that isn't true. So it's not a surprise that would then become out in their character trait. And I tell a lot of people, in different podcasts, the story of myself when, because I've been through the rig. I've experienced a load of weird stuff over the past few years, including someone trying to hypnotize me without me really realizing what was going on. But what they didn't know is that I'd already studied hypnosis, because I was into this sort of stuff when I was younger, you know, watching David Blaine with one of my ex-girlfriends. I remember we were just completely and utterly amazed, and we were watching all of the different hypnotists at the time who were out there doing their stuff. And some of them were really, really interesting. And so we got really interested in it. And I said one time, well, maybe we should try it. And I studied it for a while and I learned the idea, the processes. And she said, well, why don't we try it? And we started, and I started going through this process. And at one point she said, oh my God, oh, I can see I was doing what's called a deepener. At reading it off a script, you know, this is what a lot of people do when they're starting off. They mess around inside people's brains without really realizing what they're doing. It's so dangerous. And I realized that was happening there. And then she was like, I can see something, because I was explaining, you're looking for this, you're looking for that, you're seeing this, and image is appearing in your mind. She said, I see it. And I was like, come out. I can't do it. I can't take that much power and that much responsibility over another human being. I just can't be responsible for that. I feel weird. Being inside someone's head is something that only a certain set of people can do. Trying to manipulate people in that way is something that certain people do. So yes, it suits magicians, but I've always been really, after that experience, I was always then really suspicious of the type of people who would become hypnotists, who would use methods of distraction. I'm not saying you with your card tricks there, Ruckus, is one of those people, but there's some people who really know how to manipulate the mind, and that sort of power over somebody else is just unbelievable. Not something that I can handle at all. Really not a surprise. With the research I've done on Jeffrey Epstein, of course, all of these people's names come up and you start to wonder, is this going to be ticking off the people who were hanging around with Epstein? Were they all perverts? Was he hanging around with groups of perverts? What was your experience of David Copperfield then? You said you were a big fan of him, Ruckus. Well, did you try and follow any of his magic and see if you could do it yourself?
Oh yeah, no, I've learned how most of big illusionists such as himself, including some of his famous tricks, are performed. But I've had a long time love for this since I was probably like 8 years old, when my grandfather introduced me to coin tricks and card tricks. So it's been a long time passion of mine. David Copperfield was never one of my all-time favorites. I was actually into Blackstone, believe it or not. That was one of my favorites. I was also a big fan of the television series Night Court. Because of the particular star of that film and his particular magic tricks that he did. He was always fun, Harry. So, I as a Christian, I feel bad that I do these types of things, because it is based, it's 100% nothing but lying, you know, misdirection, deception. That's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, I believe that magic tricks, once you understand how they're performed, it doesn't ruin it at all. It gives you, like, you know, a high amount of respect for the people who can actually perform them, because it is a lot of work. It's a lot of art. It is a lot of acting. So, you know, I do appreciate the performance behind it, but I don't appreciate the fact that these people want to then deceive people in real life for their own benefit, such as this. So if these allegations are true, shame on you, David Copperfield. But if they're false, shame on you for making false accusations. But, you know, he was hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein, so he's probably dirty.
Yeah, that's the problem as well, isn't it? There's a lot of this is the power of suggestion. A lot of this is about learning how to use the power of suggestion. And in that way, there's a lot of people that we've mentioned in this show so far who use that power of suggestion, including Jimmy Savile. Now, I was talking about that documentary earlier on called Was Jimmy Savile a Wizard? And a lot of what they would do would be, what he would do was basically use his magic wand and words like jingle jangle, jingle jangle, jingle jangle, to confuse your mind, and that resets your mind, so then he can make you listen to him, and then his words are extremely important. So we're going to go to a break, because I think our guest is almost ready. Thank you, Ruckus. Join us again tomorrow for the penultimate Johnny Vedmore show, the ultimate, sorry, Johnny Vedmore show of the week, and thank you for being with us again.
All right, but Johnny, see you then.
Awesome. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
To dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to health care, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Awesome, people. Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on Today's News Talk, TNT. My next guest is someone that I'm very interested to speak to. Jay Dyer is an author, comedian, definitely funny, makes me laugh, and TV presenter, known for his deep analysis of Hollywood, geopolitics, culture, and a bizarre sense of humor and comedy. His graduate work focused on psychological warfare and film. That is awesome. He is an author of books, Esoteric Hollywood 1 and 2, and the co-creator and co-host of the television show Hollywood Decoded. He's a host of the Alex Jones Show and has been featured on Tucker Carlson, Timcast, and in debates with some of the world's top debaters. You can find him on X at J_D007 and visit his website at janalysis.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to a very special guest, Jay Dyer. Hello.
Hey, man, what's up? Yeah, I think I first saw you when you were on an interview with my good buddy, Tristan Haggard, and you guys did a really in-depth deep dive. So I was glad to be introduced to your work, and I've enjoyed what I've seen from you as well.
No, I love you, my friend. Thanks for the love. That makes me feel good. And that was I'd really love to go on a show again with Tristan. He's amazing. What a nice spirit he's got. He's got a lovely like soul to him. So I like him very much. Right, to start off, you've been spreading the word recently, the word of the return of the mega church. What is this entity and who are the characters at play?
Oh, that was a skit I made in 2018 got a little bit of traction. And I was just kind of making fun of these ridiculous mega churches, how they're kind of fronts for scams, cons, and all this kind of stuff. And then a lot of people liked that skit, so they had been asking for a part two. So yesterday I just threw together a part two, and I kind of tied in the idea of a lot of these Christian millennialist Zionist groups that, you know, are pretty much trying to capitalize on stuff in the Middle East, and that they're influenced by NGOs, think tanks, and this kind of stuff. So it was a multi-layered, just kind of random comedy skit I put together.
Yeah, completely. We've been talking about, of course, the Gaza conflict, Zionists, what's been going on in different places, and people taking advantage. Of course, I've done a lot of research on NGOs and how they've manipulated everybody in the Eastern Bloc as much as they possibly can, let alone all the way around the world in some way. But what's your take on the Gaza conflict then for the audience? Have you chosen a side within the conflict, or is it all too much of a crazy mix of right and wrong?
Well, I've done some talks on the history of the British Empire and its role there. I think it's really hard to understand this complex situation without going back to Balfour Declaration, British Mandate, all that history. Dr. Carol Quigley's works, for example, really stress the fact that there was two factions amongst the British elite. Some were pro-Arab, some were pro-Israeli. I think in the end, who ended up kind of winning out was the Rothschild side of that conflict that wanted the nation state of Israel to be set up. And so there were machinations and operations that were done to intentionally cause World War I and World War II. That's the thesis of Dr. Carol Quigley and his writings. So that's all the background. And so, you know, I don't think there's any easy answers or solutions to that conflict. I do know, of course, that Israel created Hamas in the 70s. So it was actually an entity created to have a kind of a controlled opposition, I think you could say. I think there's questions about the event that kicked all this off. Seems like perhaps Israel stood down. And I think that was intended. So my assumption would be it's a managed conflict to really complete the ideas of the Oded Yunnan plan or the Greater Israel Project. So that would be my guess as to what's going on. So, you know, they have an ideology there where anybody who's not Israeli is considered Amalek or part of their enemy perception. And so that gives them in their mind the mandate, I think, to get rid of everybody who disagrees. So, you know, it's very much, you could say, militant as much as Islam can be militant. So, I think there's problems on both sides there.
Yeah, I think the reason Hamas was created was to counteract those dangerous socialists who were picking up speed in Palestine politically.
PLO, and so like the PLO.
They were like, oh, we got to create something that we can, well, we got to create the antithesis, or what seems to be the antithesis, so that we can create that dialectic that we're so used to. That's exactly what they love to do, don't they? And that history, like you say, you go back to the Balfour Declaration, you go back to that detail, and then you look around the real movers and shakers, the people who, like, at the end of World War II, the Zionists, who were already, World War I, who were already like, okay, we can start manipulating politics here for our agenda. I mean, you discover these names like Chaim Weizmann and Nahum Goldman, and they all got these really dark stories that lead us to the world we are today. So are we in the end times?
You can't leave out the Haganah, the Irgun, the Stern Gang, and their, you know, response, the King David Hotel incident, getting rid of British rule, and then sort of setting up, their own thing there. I don't know about the end times. I mean, I'm very reticent to say anything about that. I mean, I do have a Orthodox Christian perspective, but we don't typically speculate about the end times or any of this kind of stuff. We shy away from that. So, it's always possible, but I don't have any set opinions on that. I do think, though, as I said to Patrick Henningsen the other day on his TNT show, that we see this manipulated. I think this, especially in America, you have this emphasis for the last 100 years on what's called dispensationalism, which is a weird evangelical view fostered by, I believe, Oxford University and people kind of out of the British imperial structure, theologically speaking, who wanted to push this new theology that there was a dual covenant, that Israel would be a nation state, again, as we said, post Balfour Declaration. And so I think the subversion going on through the Scofield Study Bible was intended to push that in America to get support for this, for the nation state of Israel. So, but in our view, really, that has nothing to do with anything in the Bible. It's all just sort of a modern secular created entity. If you look at Moses Hess, Theodore Herzl, these kind of characters, they really just got rid of any of the ideas of the supernatural and sort of made the collective secular nation state as the savior. So they took all those messianic ideas and made it, oh, it's actually just going to be collectively, you know, the Zionist regime that would be the salvation and so forth.
Yeah, that's a very clever thing that they did, isn't it? They really pulled a fast one on everybody with what they did, because they changed the game. They did change the game. Now, okay, we were just talking about David Copperfield being you know, accused of sexual assault and him hanging around with people like Jeffrey Epstein. Earlier on, we were talking about Jimmy Savile and stuff and things like this. And I was talking about the clubs in the 1950s and 60s in London, which saw the start of these Man in the Mask parties and Satanic Panic and stuff like that. And I've done a lot of work on sex espionage. And I've gone back into some of that primordial ooze of the modern day intelligence. There you go.
That's what I'm reading right now. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, although sex compromise has been a tool that's been used throughout history, how would you best describe, and excuse upon, the ins and outs of sex espionage?
Yeah, I think it's an overlooked element that we all think about spying. We think about conspiracies in terms of warfare and wartime. But this element is something that's very, very overlooked. And of course, we've been hearing about this since Franklin cover-up, since, you know, as you mentioned, Savile. We've heard about this through Elm Guesthouse in the UK. We've heard about this through, people may remember some years back, Deborah Palfrey, the DC Madam. We've heard about this through Henry Vinson, who was sort of the gay version of the DC Madam. He put out a book by Trine Day. And of course, I'm sure you're very familiar with Whitney Webb's books, part one and part two, and part two focusing very much on Epstein and that was a great text. And so when I read that one, volume two, I got interested in other texts that covered this. And like you said, I mean, this is an element that's so crucial, because we've actually in history, we've seen kingdoms, empires, dynasties have actually fallen from sex espionage, from people being compromised, particularly people who were like maybe high level generals or people that had military intel. And then it was usually people like hookers that would get some of this intel, pass it back to, you know, to the home state. And then there would be, you know, the invasion or whatever would be foiled. So it's a very prominent thing in history, as you noted, but we don't think about it for whatever reason happening today. I think a lot of boomers think, oh, I love my wartime stories, but conspiracies don't happen because that's just what we see in warfare. Espionage happens at all times. Okay, so this is ridiculous to think that it's only during wartime. For example, Whitney Webb in Volume 2, you know, she has a very interesting section discussing the possibility that, you know, Bill Clinton was entrapped and that sex espionage is going there. And I'm doing a lecture tour right now, and I've been discussing the mainstream stories about Woodrow Wilson being sexually compromised, and that had a lot to do with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act and other things he did as well. But yeah, I think this is overlooked, and it's very prominent. And you know, nothing would surprise me of any new information that comes out. I'm never surprised. It's kind of like, yeah, that's just par for the course now.
Yeah, it is. It is, isn't it? And yeah, I know. I do know Volume 2 very well because I helped research for it, and I wrote like parts of it line for line. And part of my job was actually looking through the Bill Clinton relationship with Epstein and his trips around Asia and Africa, along with people like Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker coming along, but other people as well, people like Casey Wasserman. And now, when you look at Casey Wasserman, his grandfather was Lou Wasserman, and Lou Wasserman, of course, was one of the heads of Hollywood, and that was really one of the times where this modern sex espionage, again, another place where it started to evolve from, and we've seen it in such movies, including movies that have included people like Kevin Spacey. So it's amazing how it all turns, and they kind of get involved in the same world that they're making movies about too. So you wonder which part of it is truth and which parts of it is fiction. It's so hard to tell, and that's part of it, isn't it? It's partly to confuse us, and sex really does confuse us. Going on, right? America is facing a divisive election period. Which candidate do you see as most likely to take the crown? And can any of them stop the social and moral decline which we see in America?
Well, I think presidents are pretty limited in what they can really do. So I don't have a whole lot of hope that one person can change the moral decay and the degeneracy that we see in the West or in America. Definitely think that Biden is far worse than Trump on many arenas. So I would definitely prefer Trump any day over Biden. I have some criticisms of Trump as well. So, there's no easy answers when it comes to politics. I usually focus on more of the meta level, because my research, a lot of what I've read, overlaps with what you guys talk about. And we see that really the political sphere is kind of, in my view, kind of a frontispiece. It's not that it has no power or no control, but they answer to people far wealthier and far more powerful than them. So they answer to steering committees, to think tanks. They answer to Bilderberg, CFR, trilateral, other foreign governments they answer to. So, the political class is really limited in what they can do. I do think there's an element of where Trump kind of like maybe just from his own desire to project as this independent billionaire, like he does do some things that the establishment doesn't like. He does seem to be anti-war. He does seem to make moves in that direction. He does seem to at least want to support American industry and the economy. But I also think that he made several bad moves, warp speed, those kinds of things were pretty terrible. So I don't have a whole lot of faith that one president can do it. But I do hope that people that ride the train of the information flow that comes out can start to figure out more and more how the world really works, and then maybe we can have some real change when we address that. But I mean, you would probably agree with me. I mean, a big part of the problem is Con Inc. And Con Inc. stands in the way because they give everybody the impression that it's just dumb libs everywhere. And it's just, Biden's an incompetent boob. And if we can just get the rascals out of there, and they actually keep everybody from looking deeper into conspiracy. So Con Inc. is always there to make sure that people know, never look at a conspiracy and always look to the boobs in Washington.
Spot on. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. I'm here with Jay Dyer, who's completely and utterly, he's got a fantastic breadth of knowledge on him. Now, there's a question, Jay, from the crowd, from the audience here. Dark Commission has asked, should Zionists be declared a terrorist organization?
I mean, I would imagine there are a lot of Zionists who see themselves as patriotic and wanting to defend their ideas of the nation state. But it does seem like this power structure that runs, you know, these entities, they do seem to be pretty, you know, underhanded. They don't have any problem doing, you know, genocide, these kinds of things. That's their take on things. So I don't know who would declare that, though. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the United Nations or international bodies in general. So on the one hand, I would say I wouldn't support the atheistic regime of the Zionists and their approach. On the other hand, I wouldn't think that I want an international body who can say all of this. But I would say that a lot of the actions and machinations that people would say, for example, critique ISIS or something like that, it does seem like there's the same kind of ideology going on. And in fact, there's a lot of questions about ISIS's origins as well from Western intelligence even.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's a fair answer. So I get moving on. I'm moving on swiftly and to somewhere else because I like to move around. I recently went through the family history of Jordan B. Peterson in a show called Who Do They Think They Are? And I traced his line back to Carolingian and Merovingian kings and queens, as well as some other European elites. What do you make of Dr. Peterson? Do you think he's doing good work, or has he got another agenda?
No, depends on what you mean.
Every time his name comes up, I can't resist trying to work on my impression and get it tweaked. I've done several podcasts and talks on Jordan Peterson over the last 6 or 7 years. I think that I have some criticisms, but I think he does good things too. So, you know, there are certain areas where I would disagree with his takes on things, maybe foreign policy wise, his support for the stabbies. All of those things I disagreed with. I also was critical of his classical liberal philosophy, which he seems to kind of be shying away from some of that nowadays. So I think he's done some good with opening up people's thought to philosophy, philosophical questions, problems that we have in the West. He's opened the discourse and dialogue about what a man is, what a woman is, masculinity, and all those things. I don't think he really has all the right answers, but he's at least raised a lot of questions and kind of shifted the discourse. So I appreciate all those elements. But I'm critical of sort of the Jungian philosophy too, that he's really wedded to. I went through his personality course lecture and he makes some great points, but there's also some areas where I think there's some odd stuff. He's very also Freudian as well. So I would disagree and criticize those things, but I take the good and try to focus on the good.
Yeah, it's really hard to because he's a character who's so mixed, in my opinion. And I've watched his Bible lectures, each of them maybe about 3 times, watched his personality lectures probably about the same amount of time. And there's so much amazing information you can take from it all that I always try and tell people, just because you don't like somebody, listen to what they're saying, because they're often talking about other people's work. And in saying that, possibly on the negative, do you think that it serves the elites well to have someone warning about the risk of othering right now while they other us as standard practice, and then we are not allowed to other them, if you get what I mean?
That's a good question. I would say rather than that being maybe the concern, the element that in my opinion might play into elite designs that Peterson discusses or seems to have affinity with would be the things that we see where he has this kind of idea of an archaeology of ideas, that we can sort of go back into all the ancient religions and craft or come up with some kind of new future religion. I'm not saying he's necessarily intentionally doing that. That's his approach, but that might lead to people thinking, well, now what we need to do then is sort of create and concoct a new future religion. And so people in his sphere, for example, like John Vervaeke, he's very adamant about pushing what he calls Silicon Sages, where we're going to have a new future kind of, it's very close to what Noah Yuval Harari talks about in his Homo Deus, and this idea of an AI God, a sort of a God emerging from within in the machine, a Deus Ex Machina that would be AI. And it would be superior to all the other previous religions because it would be AI smushing all the religions together and it could spit it out really fast or something. So I think the danger is more so my perspective. Those elements of the Petersonian orbit sort of lending towards what H.G. Wells predicted would be a future world religion that would be concocted and created by the elite to foster the technocratic global governance. So that would be more of what I would be concerned with in his... The seeds of that in his worldview.
We're talking about seeds and Yuval Noah Harari. Do you think that's what he's there for? Is he there to plant the seeds of what the elite want to see in the future? Does he actually believe these things himself as being the right way? Because he seems to warn about certain things while telling the elites who are doing those exact same things that's what the future is going to look like anyway.
Yeah, I think he sees himself as a harbinger of this coming order, a kind of a John the Baptist of the technocracy, so to speak. I think I've got Homo Deus over there. It's just like all the other transhumanist elitist texts. It's this idea that, oh, we're all going to evolve into being, tech gods. This is promise it's given, but it's not actually for everyone. This is not for the masses. This is for the 0.001%. And so, yeah, I think it's total. Car salesmanship is what I would say. That's what his role is to be this. And maybe he's going to, again, promote the same things that Vervaeke promotes, which is Silicon Sages. This is basically the idea that there's going to be these AI gods walking around that you will defer to them. They will be like the I don't know, like archangels walking around that are going to tell you, who God is, what meaning is, what life is. But it's going to be what the elite program it to say. So it's not really going to even be some sort of decentralized, supercomputer information hub. It's going to be something, I think, that fits the elite designs. And again, we know that because one of the things I do is lecture through a lot of the texts of the power elite. We've lectured through about 50, 60 of these now, and they pretty much all kind of say the same thing. And one of the things when they talk about the future religion is that they want to have a controlled, created sort of shell religion run by from within a technocratic elite, but has the appearance of smashing all the religions together and so forth. So I think that they're leaning towards thinking that the types of Dadaism, dataism, not Dada, the art movement, but dataism that Harari promotes, that can be the religion of the future. I think whether they believe or know that they're bullshitters, I don't know, but I think they do promote this as a real possibility for the future.
Yeah, it made me think when you were saying that there, well, of course, I think about collective consciousness and the idea of people like Barbara Marx Hubbard and their idea of all us being united in one, in some form of a cyberspace where our minds are all melded in and we own absolutely nothing, not even a body, and we're supposed to be happy. I see something else happening though as well. I see something already emerging, and I've posited it as a possibility. There's a character called Adrian Dittman out there on the X Spaces, and I think he's personally, I think he's Elon Musk's AI glove or like a surrogate. He could be an AI, but sometimes a real person slips into him. And I think we're going to see that sort of symbiotic relationship. What do you see these people creating for the future? Because they seem to be the ones in power at the moment, really, or taking over power. Are they in control of the levers of power in the Western world? Is it being handed over from the old world order and these new technocratic elite are going to be the future, and what they say, whether we like it or not, is going to be so? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, I think about 6 or 8 years ago, we started seeing at Bilderberg more and more tech elites showing up. More and more people like Regina Dugan, who was once at DARPA and then went to Google and so forth. We saw, you know, other Silicon Valley elites coming to Bilderberg. I think they were handing off and passing the baton to the new guard. And I think that they think that's the best means for managing humanity in the future, because if you think about it, you know, the idea is at least that computers are not subject to human emotions and frailty and fallibility, or so they think. And so it won't be able to be swayed if you can eventually build the infrastructure, the superstructure to have AI running everything. So I think the idea is mega smart cities, everybody compacted into them, everything traced, tracked, and controlled, carbon rations, all that. You can go back to the old Planned-opolis videos from that UK think tank from 12, 15 years ago. That kind of lays out, I think, where they're going. And again, in the books of these guys, they all talk about this. You mentioned the global brain. Jacques Attali, who's known as the Kissinger of France, in his book, Brief History of the Future, he's got a whole chapter on, by, I think he says, 2040, 2050, they want to have the global brain matrix in place where we're all hooked up to it. We don't live in any individual existence. We all only exist in the collective hive mind. He even calls it the golem. So this is the medieval Jewish mystical idea out of Kabbalah that you can create this, clay husk of a man that can be sort of do your bidding. And an AI creature, basically, is what I think that the idea is there. So, that really is, I think, where they want to go. And that's ultimately the system of total control. So I think that that's why they favor that. And you mentioned Peterson. I'm not saying Peterson thinks this, but there is an element to where they have, I think, modeled things from Neoplatonism, from Carl Jung and some of the philosophers who talked about the noosphere. Teilhard de Chardin talked about this. It also goes back to Hegel and Hegelianism, of everything sort of moving and evolving towards one overmind consciousness where everybody's hooked into this thing. So it's very philosophical, it's very hermetic, it's very alchemical. It actually comes out of all those traditions.
Yeah, for what you're saying there, then obviously you research a lot in human psychology. What do you think are the most important philosophers to study from the past who can give us the tools to understand our current situation?
Well, the current situation is interesting because it's a mix of a lot of the ideas that came before. Off the top of my head, it's very, probably the most important would be to understand Plato's Republic. Plato's Republic serves as the model for both socialism, communism, monopoly capitalism, and technocracy. So all of those things kind of have their origins in those texts. I think Aristotle is very important, but he's maybe not as important in regard to future technocracy as Plato would be. I mean, Bertrand Russell, you know, H.G. Wells, all those guys said that the world that they're going to build would be modeled specifically on Plato's Republic. in terms of understanding where we are now, I would say it's important maybe to know a little. I mean, Hegel's philosophies are bizarre, kind of weird, but there's a great book called Hegel and the Hermetic Tradition, which is written by another academic describing the influence of Hegel on Marxism, socialism, as well as technocracy in general. That's a very important text, I would say. And I would say beyond even philosophy, what might be more important would be something like Anglo-American Establishment by Quigley or Tragedy and Hope. Those texts, I think, are more insightful, even more so than philosophy. I mean, I'm not saying philosophy doesn't matter. Like Kissinger, for example, wrote his thesis on Toynbee and Spengler. And so, you know, those kind of British imperial thinkers are important, maybe more so than philosophers are. I would say maybe even H.G. Wells is more important than, and I'm speaking specifically of Wells's nonfiction like Open Conspiracy, New World Order. I think those texts which actually deal with a lot of philosophy, believe it or not. Those I think would be more relevant even than any philosophers, because philosophy begins to wane after the Enlightenment. It kind of sort of loses its importance and focus.
Yeah, most definitely. A lot of those people, of course, are Fabians as well. So they have that sort of like element where they were doing the same thing you well know Harari was doing, was expecting the future to look like this and convincing everybody to walk towards it. So what's your next step, Jay? What are you planning for the future? Are you going to do more writing because you're already an author? So are you getting more books out there?
Yeah, we did two on Hollywood. We did one one philosophy book. And then I have another book that's kind of collected all of the essays I wrote over the last 10 years. but I want to work on volume 3 of Esoteric Hollywood. I've got about 100-150 pages of that written. And then I want to do another book on espionage, sexpionage, and the overlap with religion, because a lot of people don't know. I mean, you know, Whitney Webb's books are great for covering the political sphere, you know, even in the entertainment sphere. There's a lot of espionage that has controlled the religious sphere as well. A lot of prelates have been compromised. A lot of what's happened in the Vatican, for example, in the 20th century, a lot of that had to do with sexual compromise with, you know, the Skittles mafia in the Vatican, which has to do with control. A lot of the pedo stuff that we've heard in the news about the Roman Catholic Church, that's also a play. I'm not saying everything was sex espionage, but it's an element that plays into this. That was a big part of P2. And Gladio in Italy during the Cold War. A lot of those prelates had been invited to bunga bunga parties, to orgies and so forth. So there was a lot of sex espionage in the Vatican in the 60s and 70s that people don't know about. So I just think that's an area that hasn't been explored very well. There have been some books that have come out recently about some overlap between spying and church leaders, but that's few and far between.
Awesome. Jay Dyer, I hope all of the best for the future. Thanks for coming on the Johnny Vedmore Show. You are a mind, and I appreciate you. Thank
Can
you.
Can I point out one thing? We'll be live in Vegas June 22nd. If you want to hear me give a lecture on these topics, I do a long two-hour lecture as well as a bunch of our friends. There's also comedy involved, too.
Awesome.
Get those tickets on my Twitter.
Listen to him. Get those tickets on the Twitter. And thank you to my guest today, Tim Bodner, Courtney Turner, and the one and only, of course, Jay Dyer. Up next on TNT is the one and only Mark Morano Show. So stay tuned. And remember, you're watching today's News Talk.